Welcome, everyone. I'm your host, Emerson Green. So I've seen this objection to panpsychism crop up a few times, and I suppose it's worth addressing for that reason. The actual substance of the objection can be answered in a paragraph or two, so I decided to take the scenic route in answering this and took the chance to reflect on death, some personal history, but mostly covering relevant background information about how panpsychists see the mind and its place in nature. So here's the question. If everything is conscious, how could we ever be unconscious, like during dreamless sleep? We could ask a similar question about general anesthesia, death, and other states in which we're not conscious. So first, it's worth pointing out that few panpsychists believe everything is conscious, but even those who do shouldn't find this problem troubling either. Panpsychists don't think that you always existed or always will exist. If we were to translate this problem to physicalism, it would sound something like, if everything is physical, how could the tree outside my window stop existing? Maintaining that everything is physical doesn't somehow commit one to believing that any particular physical object couldn't begin to exist, cease to exist, or come in and out of existence at different times. Likewise, panpsychists don't believe that any particular human subject exists at all times or couldn't come in and out of existence. A new subject was formed at your birth and will cease to exist at your death. Stretches of unconsciousness may punctuate the time between, and when your human structure disintegrates into a myriad of physical processes, each cycling on in their own direction, you will no longer exist. Think of the combination problem, supposedly the chief obstacle to panpsychism. The issue is, very roughly, how do novel minds form at a higher level from a confluence of other minds? How and why would distinct subjects of experience ever conjoin to form a new subject of experience? I bring this up because the reply to how can panpsychists sleep, as well as related questions concerning unconsciousness, seems to be contained in the very presentation of the combination problem. If panpsychism is true, our minds didn't always exist. New subjects emerge, old subjects break down, birth and death are pronounced instances of this combinatorial and decombinatorial process. But there's no reason the same principle couldn't apply in less conspicuous and permanent cases. If it seems to you that your mind ceases to exist every night, as many physicalists have assured me, panpsychism doesn't require you to deny that appearance. On panpsychism, birth and death are, as I said, dramatic instances of combinatorial processes, but there's no reason to suppose combination and decombination must be rare or permanent. Assuming certain criteria need to be satisfied for combination to occur, it's easy to imagine how one or two of those criteria could fail to be realized when the brain is in an unconscious state. Similarly, physicalists believe certain criteria need to be satisfied for consciousness to exist, and presumably some of those criteria fail to be realized during sleep and other states of unconsciousness. In fact, I've heard some physicalists claim that they cease to exist every night. Usually it's in the context of an Epicurean point about why we shouldn't fear death. A panpsychist is equally free to take the same Epicurean stance towards sleep and death. In a state of genuine unconsciousness, you don't exist. This might be a dramatic way of putting it, but if it's appropriate to say that physicalists believe the human mind ceases to exist during deep sleep and then reemerges every morning, then likewise, panpsychists could say that the human mind recombines every morning and decombines during sleep. Whatever laws govern combination apply all the time. If we interrupt the structural dynamics of the human brain, we could alter the combinatorial state of the subjects involved. In other words, combination and decombination could occur in us every day. The boundaries around subjects are continually redrawn, not just at birth and death, but throughout life. The beginning of your existence marked the formation of a new subject, and this subject's existence is quite precarious. Slight chemical changes to the brain can cause us to ascend into a vivid hallucinatory world, induce ego death, or send us spiraling into terrifying vistas of experience. Physical damage to the brain can alter our minds and erase most of what makes us distinctly human. In the extremes, the correlation between the physical and mental is obvious. Sometimes painfully so, such as in the case of dementia. Panpsychists believe that there is a perfect one-to-one correlation between physical activity and mental activity. They're two sides of the same coin. There's no reason to think that entirely ordinary processes couldn't disrupt the structure responsible for your existence as a distinct subject of experience. Certain changes in structure, be they commonplace or rare, permanent or impermanent, affect your status as a combined mind. Some panpsychists believe, in effect, that we've discovered drugs that influence combination. For example, propofol, etomidate, and ketamine are the IV sedative hypnotic agents commonly used to induce general anesthesia, which, on this type of panpsychism, represents a state in which decombination has occurred. Or take split brain cases. Though this is a tendentious reading of the split brain data, many believe that patients with a severed corpus callosum, the bundle of nerve fibers that connect the two brain hemispheres and permit communication between the right and left sides of the brain, have a correspondingly split mind, in the sense that there are multiple conscious subjects in one body. Panpsychists certainly have no issue with this interpretation of the split brain data, which happens to also be favored by many physicalists. In fact, panpsychists may have an easier time with this hypothesis, since we already believe that our minds are the combinatorial result of many other minds. It stands to reason that we could reverse this process, intentionally or unintentionally, by significantly altering the arrangement of matter in the brain. However, on physicalism, it may seem surprising that one body can hold multiple subjects of experience, since the mind is supposed to be a highly emergent system that depends entirely on the complex physical workings of the brain. Don't physicalists find it a little surprising that subjects apparently don't need a whole brain to be conscious? Of course, I'm only addressing physicalists who believe split-brain patients contain multiple subjects of experience. So, with one answer to the original question on the table, let's turn to another possibility. Sleep, the presence of phenomenal consciousness persists, while higher-level cognitive and mnemonic features of consciousness fade. Your memory of your dream life is not particularly reliable. It's significantly less reliable than your memory under ordinary conditions, and we do, in fact, often forget our dream experiences after waking, sometimes mere moments after waking. The well-known unreliability of our dream memory leaves open the possibility that we're dreaming all night and simply don't remember it. To reject this possibility as absurd would require one to place an unwarranted, meaning utterly baffling, unjustifiable, degree of trust in their dream memory. The crucial parts of this explanation are already accepted by anyone who's appreciated the tenuous bridge between our waking and sleeping minds. For example, your waking memory of your dream life is not particularly reliable. If you don't remember something happening in your sleep, that doesn't mean it didn't happen. This phenomenon of forgetting dream experiences, which everyone already recognizes, is simply being extended. To make this defense, all we need is a handful of widely accepted facts along with one modification. This isn't just happening some nights, it's happening every night. You know that thing that we already think is happening some nights? Maybe that thing that we already recognize happens every night and not just some nights. Earlier, I mentioned that some opponents of panpsychism are adamant that they don't experience anything during sleep. They would have remembered it, presumably. Here's something that should not be controversial. You do not have an infallible memory. If you don't remember something happening, that doesn't mean it didn't happen, especially if it wasn't anything remarkable. And this should apply even more to experiences while dreaming. Even at its best, our memory is quite fallible, and during sleep, I think it's safe to say our memory is not at its best. Of course, the response that I'm discussing here is not the only one on offer to panpsychists. If you are in possession of an infallible dream memory, and you're extremely confident that your mind completely disappears every night, that still would not rule out panpsychism. The first decombination option is still available to those who prefer to maintain that there is a total cessation of phenomenal consciousness during states of sleep. I certainly don't think the decombination option is a bad one, though it's obviously possible to have very silly motives for rejecting the memory option. One reason I lean slightly in favor of the latter comes down to habit. I suspected that we were leading forgotten dream lives before I was a non-physicalist. You could be a physicalist or a dualist and believe that we're having experiences all night, however unremarkable they may be, and simply don't remember them, which is often the case with dreams. In the past, I'd bring up this possibility with others and they would be interested, mildly skeptical, but generally receptive. Now if I bring up this possibility in the context of panpsychism, people get angry. That's because we're speaking about panpsychism, and people get irrationally angry about panpsychism. A panpsychist could offer the most benign, commonly recognized observation about consciousness imaginable, and a certain type of person will furiously deny it. So, one minor point about terms. Consciousness is an infamously polysemous word, used in innumerable contexts, with sometimes completely unrelated meanings. I bring this up because of the casual usage of terms like unconsciousness and unconscious, which a pedant might argue constitutes a problem for this view. I think that one who's entirely convinced that we're always dreaming should have no issue with talk of states of unconsciousness and the like, since consciousness refers to seemingly infinite distinct concepts, many of which are absent in states of unconsciousness. So one who accepts this view doesn't need to reject as a misnomer a word like unconsciousness. Maybe a bit of personal history could explain why this view never seemed so counterintuitive to me. My introduction to some of the basic ideas in philosophy of mind came through Sam Harris, who I initially started listening to because he wrote Letter to a Christian Nation. I was a young atheist who essentially had been the kind of Christian to whom that book was addressed. Harris not only directed me to Thomas Nagel and David Chalmers, but also helped me understand, through his emphasis on mindfulness meditation, that phenomenologically there's quite a lot going on that we rarely notice. We never attend to many of the experiences occurring at every moment. They don't get our attention. We just never notice them. Furthermore, we often conflate distinct features of the mind, which is part of why consciousness is such a suitcase term. Harris helped conceptually separate the self, language, free will, reason, and of course, experience, the thing that motivates us to say there is a hard problem of consciousness in the first place. In her book, Conscious, Annika Harris does a great job stripping away many of the contents and features of consciousness until we're left with nothing but experience. I think this all helped lay a foundation such that when the thought occurred to me, maybe we're dreaming all night and don't remember it, it didn't sound all that strange. I didn't make the mistake of thinking that would entail anything tremendously complicated. It could be a very simple form of experience, devoid of any bits of language, sense of self, and of course, memory. I also didn't think it would be so weird if we never noticed it. Perhaps without that kind of introduction to philosophy of mind and phenomenology, this idea would seem a lot stranger to me. So, could it be the case that a dim glow of consciousness persists as long as I'm alive? Memory is a complex, high-level feature of consciousness, and it's easy to conceptually separate experience and memory. Other features of our minds come online and go offline. The contents of our minds change. But regardless of your background metaphysical views, we can't rule out the idea that there's a light that never goes out completely. So there are at least two options available to panpsychists when it comes to explaining sleep and other states of unconsciousness. One related to decombination, the other related to memory. On panpsychism, birth and death are dramatic instances of combinatorial processes, but there's no reason to suppose combination or decombination must be rare or permanent. Whatever laws govern combination apply all the time. Certain changes in structure, be they commonplace or rare, permanent or impermanent, affect your status as a unified subject. There's no reason to think that entirely ordinary processes, like sleep, couldn't disrupt the neural edifice responsible for your status as a distinct subject of experience. The boundaries around minds could be continually redrawn, not just at birth and death, but throughout life. Alternatively, one might hold that, during sleep, the presence of phenomenal consciousness persists, while higher-level cognitive and mnemonic features of consciousness fade. Your memory of your dream life is not particularly reliable. It's significantly less reliable than your memory under ordinary conditions, And we do, in fact, often forget dream experiences after waking, sometimes mere moments after waking. The well-known unreliability of our dream memory leaves open the possibility that we're experiencing all night and simply don't remember it. And one doesn't need to be a panpsychist to believe this. To reject this possibility as absurd would require one to place an unwarranted amount of trust in their dream memory, to put it mildly. The crucial parts of this explanation are not new or controversial. For example, your waking memory of your dream life is not particularly reliable. If you don't remember something happening in your sleep, that doesn't mean it didn't happen. To make this defense, all we need is a handful of widely recognized facts, along with one modification. This isn't just happening some nights, it's happening every night. This phenomenon that everyone already recognizes, forgetting dream experiences, is simply being extended. It's possible there are further options I haven't thought of. Ultimately, I'm agnostic between the two I've offered, though I often lean slightly in favor of the memory option. I'm intrigued by the thought that the complexities of our minds are actually stripped away under certain conditions, and that the light of consciousness is never extinguished. Thank you for listening. I've been Emerson Green, and I'll talk to you next time.